This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So, you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Zachary Richache, the number one overall pick in the NBA for our Atlanta Hawks this season. And Zachary, it's good to have you back on the show, man. First and foremost, you know, we were talking to Coach Snyder about you, and he was saying, you know, everything's pointing up, man, and he feels like you feel more comfortable. You feel more comfortable? You feel like you're coming into your own right now?
Hey, how you doing? Yes, I'm feeling more comfortable. I feel like every game it's, you know, a new opportunity to learn. And yeah, just game after game, I'm trying to learn every time I step on the court, and it's just a great feeling to be out there every night competing with my teammates.
Tout d'abord, excellent travail cette saison, mon ami.
Good French.
Thanks, man. Two years of high school. I got to bust it out sometimes, Zachary. No, we were just saying, man, to lead all the scorers the other night, every night, every shooter, sometimes you feel it, you don't feel it, but you feel you're getting more comfortable with your shot in the NBA?
Yeah, I mean, it's just about like repetition. I'm working out every day and make sure, you know, I do the right thing, about my shooting form and to get the right rhythm too. So yeah, I just, you know, feel like, yeah, every night, it can be, you know, can be great. And I feel like we've been playing great too. And like I say, it's just, you know, getting the right rhythm. It's work also for my shooting.
Zachary Richache joining us here on the show. Hawks take on the Pacers. Ironically, it's 92.9 The Game night on Thursday night. We invite you guys to come down as our personalities will take over all the in-game stuff and be a part of what's going on inside the arena. Zachary, what's been the biggest adjustment for you in the NBA, man? Is it the travel? Is it just the level of play? What's been the biggest adjustment for you?
I'd probably say, like, yeah, the travel. It's been crazy, to be honest. I wasn't used to, you know, travels, you know. We play a lot too. We have a crazy schedule. Mm. So yeah, it's just different. Mm. It's just different. We playing back to back. Yeah, I feel like that was the biggest adjustment for me.
Yeah, every time we talk to guys, whether it's soccer players or football players or basketball, America is a big country. There's a lot of travel. Zachary Rees-Sachet is with us here, guys, on Dukes and Bell. The relationship with Trey, how are you getting along with Trey and the guys?
It's great. It's great. Trey was the first one that I met because he invited me to, you know, in September, he invited me to join him in OKC for like a weekend with Dyson, and I had a really good time over there, and since day one we started to, you know, get to know each other, and it's been great to play with him, and I feel like I also have like great teammates, everybody has confidence in me, and I feel like we've been playing great, and I'm feeling really good about my teammates on and off the court. They're great guys.
That's good to hear. Zachary, how's your physical development, man? I mean, look, you talked about the grind of the travel. I mean, you know, the eating, the working out. I mean, how's your body feel at this point in the season with just, you know, 20-some-odd games left in the year?
I would say I'm tired, but I'm getting used to this feeling, so that's all right. I feel like the biggest part is to deal with the you know, the fatigue, and still be able to work hard every day, and the big deal is to be ready to play, you know, and you just gotta manage this aspect, and I feel like I'm feeling better every day. I'm getting more comfortable, so it's cool.
We're talking with Zachary Rees-Sachet, our rookie, our first-round draft pick with the Hawks here on Dukes and Bell. The other night in Memphis, I was hoping Coach Snyder would say, keep shooting, because you were on fire. How's your relationship with Coach Snyder, and what is he telling you?
We have a great relationship. I feel like he has a lot of confidence in me, and as a shooter, as a, you know, young player, as a rookie, It's great to know that I'm really grateful, you know, and it keeps helping me a lot on my game. I can always ask him different type of questions. So yeah, it's like a free relationship where everybody can can speak to each other, and I'm great to have him as my coach, because it's been a great year for me, and I hope he's gonna get better.
Eastern Conference Rookie of the Month, Zachary Rees-Sachet, here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, for the month of February. Zach, what about the new guys, man? LeVert, Niang, Terrence Mann. These guys come in, and they have really turned it on. They've really helped the squad. You know, nobody wants to see anybody traded, but when DeAndre Hunter left, a lot of Hawks fans were like, what's this going to look like? Talk about those guys, if you would, just a little.
I would say we really, like, lucky to have them. They contribute a lot to our team. They play hard. They play the right way. And even like off the court, they great guys too. So yeah, we're really lucky to have them. It's been I said before, it was the deadline was kind of, you know, crazy. Nobody knew nothing, and just to be able to know, bounce back and see like the progress that we had, it's great.
Zachary Rees-Sachet with us on the WadeFort.com hotline. You're going to be 20 next month, so you're still a really young guy. You're a rookie. How cool has it been to meet some of the guys that you grew up idolizing, some of your favorite players? Who are some of the guys you got to meet so far in the NBA that you grew up watching?
Like you say, I'm really young, and just being able to compete with some of like the best players in the world, that I used to watch when like growing up. It's such a great feeling. Like I feel really lucky, and I think like I can learn even more now that I'm on the court with them, you know. And I'm just super grateful for that.
Zachary, you know Alex Saar, right, pretty well. I mean, you guys played against each other over there in France?
I know him a lot. We was on the same national team, like,
sure,
in the youth category for, like, 3 summers in a row. We had a good time. He's a great guy. Great teammate also. So yeah, I know him pretty well, and I'm happy for him too.
Yeah, I was just curious, like, if you you call him and like, look, I'm having a better season than you. I didn't know if you just bust his chops a little bit since you guys go way back. Man, we wish you nothing but success. We're enjoying watching you continue to grow. By the way, as Mike mentioned, April 8th is his birthday, so I'm sure you guys will be celebrating. And hopefully we can do something in the playoffs, man. Zachary, thanks for joining us, man, and good luck on Thursday night against the Pacers.
Thank you very much.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. 5 times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you.
But Lauren Williams covers our team for the AJC and AJC.com.
Yeah.
She sits down with us here, and Lauren, good to see you as always. We still won at Memphis.
Yeah.
Come back home, had a chance to win one against the Milwaukee Bucks. That score is, what, 121 apiece?
Yep.
And then they score the last 6 points, and we can't. Trey said he was frustrated at himself. He missed some shots at the end. So you look at tonight's contest, and you go, all right, we got to win some games at home here. This is a long homestand.
Yeah, these are those games that the Hawks should be winning, especially since they have that sort of home court advantage, if you will. I did joke with somebody at the Bucks game at the beginning. It's like you couldn't really tell which fan base was cheering the loudest because you couldn't tell what was going on. Because if the Bucks scored, you'd hear cheers. If the Hawks scored, you'd hear cheers. And it's just you have to watch the game to understand, you know, who's doing what. But, yeah, they got to win. It's important that they get these games, especially with how tight things are between Orlando, Miami. Obviously, Orlando's kind of in a weird spot where they've gone on the other side of the win-loss column, but Miami's peaking a little bit. They did just lose to the Cavs the other day, so maybe the Hawks catch a little bit of a break there. But honestly, I think their best bet right now is 7 through 9. They're obviously at 9 right now, but you'd love to see them go up to 7 just because with that play-in game, you'd rather them have to worry about winning one versus trying to win two.
Sure. And all these teams are just so similar, as you just pointed out. We're just a half a game out of 8. Mm-hmm. We're a game and a half out of the 7. So, and all these teams are all incomplete. Miami's not the same team out without Jimmy Butler. Mm-mm. You know, Orlando's had some injuries as well, you just referred to. And no one buys the Bulls. So, so could you foresee, though, what Trey did a couple years ago, where he just could take over a game like he did in Charlotte or he did in, back then it was, Cleveland?
Mm-hmm. I definitely think we can see Trey take over, but I think what the Hawks really want him to do is getting guys like Caris LeVert involved, getting guys like George Niang involved, getting guys like Terrence Mann involved, getting those guys so that if a team tries to send a double at him, if somebody's hot, he can find somebody that open man and they can get some of those scores going. And that was kind of what got them in trouble in Miami. You want to see them sort of evolve past the needing Trey to take over in games. And so the fact that we're seeing good things out of Caris LeVert in the clutch is huge. And you just want to see that happen more consistently.
Lauren, what's your take on the new guys? I mean, now they've been here a little bit.
Yeah.
When they got here, everybody's like, what is this?
Yeah.
I said that.
Okay. Niang can shoot it, as I like to say. Niang, shoot that thing.
Yep.
Terrence Mann defensively has been really good. And then you talk about Caris LeVert, who I think a lot of people are surprised. And then I remember Trey saying this a few weeks back. He's like, look, Caris LeVert has always been a really good player.
Yeah.
But he was hidden on that Cleveland team.
Yeah.
And now we're getting the chance to see him. What's your take on these guys?
I mean, I remember when Caris was kind of that guy in Brooklyn. I mean, he went to that Nets team that was under Kenny Atkinson, and then he kind of would take over games. And I feel like we're starting to see that guy again. I mean, we've seen him come up in some seriously clutch moments. Right. And so I'm really impressed with what he's been able to do. I think, again, Niang can shoot that thing, as you can say. Again, you just want to see some of the stuff happen more consistently. I think what I'm not as impressed with is just how much Terrence needs to kind of be ramped up. But we've been seeing him get more aggressive as of late. And then, obviously, Niang's defense hasn't been where you necessarily want to see this team be. But he's a big body, and you can't really, you know, undermine that or not take that into account. So I'm pretty impressed with them. I would be interested to see if the Hawks want to re-sign Caris LeVert. I think they should because you have his bird rights. You can bring him in, and it doesn't affect the cap nearly as much as if you were bringing somebody off the street. So I like him, and I would want to see what the Hawks are able to do with these three guys with a full season under them.
Lauren Williamson. She covers the Hawks every day. And she's with us here on Duke Bell Live from State Farm. Yeah, I was just going to ask you, just answer the question. So, because it is an expiring contract.
Mm-hmm.
His athleticism, you know, when Dyson Daniels makes that steal in Memphis, the way he cuts to the basket, 21 the other night in a losing effort. So, but that's the kind of bench scoring. You got to replace Bogey.
Yep.
You got to replace Carl. We just mentioned DeAndre Hunter last break. So, how are we going to spend this dividend we've been given because of the things we did at the trade deadline?
I mean, you definitely aren't going to bring a guy like Garrison Matthews back. So that's right. Obviously going to free up some cap space to potentially do a little bit more. Obviously, you just brought Dom Barlow in, and he's a cheaper guy than maybe a Garrison Matthews would be as
like
a free
Barlow.
Agent.
I like Barlow.
Yeah. So I definitely think the Hawks did some moves that, you know, give them a little bit more flexibility of moving off of Bogdanovich's contract, moving off of DeAndre's contract. And, you know, you can be able to sign a guy like Harris maybe in the $10 million range over a couple of years. We'll see. You know, this team likes to do some of those smaller contracts over longer right. periods of time. We see what they did with Veet in the offseason. So, I mean, it opens up some room to maybe potentially court some other cheaper free agents that are on the market, but I'm not particularly impressed with this free agent class. Right. So,
Carl, just as a follow-up to we were just talking about this, you're here, so perfect to ask. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be a star, is it?
No, it's not. It's not. And that's the frustrating part about this right. team is that, you know, your second star is Jalen Johnson, who just hasn't been able to stay healthy these last couple of seasons, and especially with how much of an impact he is going to make. I think you want to see this team further along, maybe before you're trying to court that star free agent.
Lauren Williams joining us, guys. Hawks, Pacers tonight. Why do you think we have an issue with this team? They've kind of owned us the last couple of seasons.
The Hawks can't defend the three, and this team shoots a lot of threes. They shoot a lot of threes, especially with a guy like Miles Turner who can switch the floor or space the floor, excuse me.
As a big, yeah.
As a big, and so that's going to be a test for a guy like Onyeka Okongwu, who has been playing really, really well as of late. He's a lot more mobile than a Clint Capella, but I think if this team is going to be able to kind of stop some of those threes, it's just making sure that they're getting to their rotations on time, they're helping in time, and they're not leaving wide open threes. I think that's the big thing that's hurt them is that they've been late to some of those rotations and guys have been wide open.
Lauren, do you think it was a mistake that we didn't move Clint at the trade deadline? I know he's embraced his role off the bench.
Right.
But he's going to walk away, right?
You got nothing for him.
Yeah. I think the thing is, it's just, what were you going to get for him? Like,
Seriously,
what were you going to get
some
back for him?
Second round pick or, yeah.
I just think there wasn't really a market for him. I think if they were able to move him,
they would have.
It's similar to DeAndre. I mean, we didn't hear what there was a big market for a guy like DeAndre Hunter, but you're able to move him for not only two vets, but a few second round picks.
Sure.
To a team that's a contender. So they're kind of trying to buy. I don't think there were any buyers out there for Clint.
We talked about this when it went down. We haven't talked to you since. Mm-hmm. But when Trey had the run-in with the lady ref and then made the comments. And I just thought that Carlos and I said, of all the things, if you don't listen to Trey or know where he's at, I thought it was the most eloquent argument for him that anyone's made, including his coaches, since he's gotten here, basically saying, look, I'm not expected to get every call, but – we got folks, there's vendettas, and it's very getting personal. And I thought he made a great point, but the rest of the country's not going to hear that.
I think the thing that stuck out to me when he made that comment was that I'm not the same person I was when I was 19. And so, you know, as officials, you want to be able to believe that they can see that these guys can evolve and grow and mature. But then you also want to see them, you know, be a little bit more equal in terms of those star calls. I mean,
we just don't win enough to get those calls.
Maybe, but then I was watching the game against the Grizzlies and Thunder yesterday, and the discrepancy between some of the calls that Ja Morant was getting and some of the calls that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was. It was just kind of, and for as much as Ja is driving to the basket and getting kind of whipped around in the paint a little bit, he wasn't getting nearly as many calls as a guy like Shai, who, you know, happens to do a little bit more from the mid-range. So it's interesting. I don't want to get fined. I don't have NBA fine money. But fortunately, I'm also not a player. But the Hawks have just not gotten a lot of luck in terms of the officiating so far.
We'll see what happens tonight. Shai, your MVP, by the way?
He's at the top of my list for sure.
Okay.
I can't vote, though.
All right.
I don't have a vote.
What? All right.
No, the AJC doesn't vote. on the words like this.
Oh, that's right. That's right. We were talking about that with Tim Tucker and the
yeah.
old guys. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I
that's
just,
not right.
No.
You know what? I'm okay with it. I don't want that pressure.
You don't want that smoke?
No.
Like Diana Rossini telling you voting for MVP?
Exactly.
Hall of Fame?
When that list comes out and they're like, why did she right. vote for I don't want that. I'm okay. Right. I'm all okay right. about that.
All right. That's, I love her answer. He's at the top of my list.
Yeah.
And by the way, we spent a lot of time having some fun, but man, the Lakers look great.
They do. I mean, Luka Magic.
The question you just mentioned, SGA, can Oklahoma City handle their business now? Mm-hmm. Imagine if you get the 1-2 in the West.
Mm-hmm. That's going to remind me sort of that Nuggets LA series a couple of years ago. I lean a little bit more toward OKC just because of the size that they have, and if Chet is healthy and they're playing him and Hartenstein at the same time, I don't know if Rui and Jackson
right.
Hayes can handle that for a 7-game series.
Lauren, before we let you go, they're so good defensively. We're talking about
yes.
OKC.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't watch them every night because they're in the West, but they came here, and I'm just like, they're so good defensively.
They're in a league of their own in terms of defense. The Cavs are the closest second for that for me.
Agreed.
So I don't know. I really want that Thunder Cavs series. I really do for the finals.
We'll
I really, really do.
Lauren, thanks for stopping by as always. Great job. Read her. Check her out, AJC.com. She covers the Hawks for us, Hawks Pacers tonight. Then they play on Saturday.
Yes, they do.
So we'll get a chance to see what they do in this 2-game series. Thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Let's talk to Steve Kuenen, Hawks CEO, as we do each and every week. Good afternoon, Steve. How are you today?
I'm doing well. How are y'all?
Well, we're good. I mean, we had 92-9 game night last night. The Hawks win. I mean, we're in a great mood today, except for we're waiting on the Falcons to do something. But, I mean, outside of that, we're in a good mood.
I couldn't concur more.
Well, good. I'm glad.
I mean, we get on the floor for the promo we were involved in last night. I look over and look at Kirby Smart sitting with Steve Kuenen over there. Carl, pretty sweet.
There you go. Yep, the old ball coach was in town with his son and some of his son's friends, and we were happy to host him and had a really good time.
Yeah, I mean, look, I said this to somebody, you know, they were like, man, Kirby's at the game. I'm like, it's not uncommon, I guess, for those folks who've never gone to a Hawks game or experienced one live, and, you know, we don't assume everybody's been, like, the celebrity's there all the time. It's kind of what we do in Atlanta, right? It's kind of what you guys do is you entertain. And I don't know, Steve, I'm asking, how many calls do you guys get? I know Kirby's a different situation, but, you know, on a nightly basis or a weekly basis where we have a long homestand, you guys get a variety of people that want to come. I mean, the one time I went, I've told the stories years ago when they were making the first Marvel movies, the whole cast was upstairs in a suite.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say a lot of times, yeah, a lot of our guests are upstairs in a suite. But last night, Michael Penix was there with a wonderful guest. And obviously, you know, we have season ticket holders like 2 Chainz, Quavo, Boosie, who sit on the floor and bring a lot of interest. And, you know, we're a popular destination for celebrities. We had Anne Hathaway last year, Jason Bateman many times, Luke and Owen Wilson this year. So when people are in town shooting, you know, they get in touch and we're happy to host them.
Very cool.
Really, really wonderful people.
Nice. Saw Brad Guzan there from Atlanta United sitting courtside with his family. That was really cool last night as well. Steve Kuenen is with us, guys, the Hawks CEO. We were just talking about, you know, just kind of get out of this rut of like one game forward to one game back. Can they get on that run? I guess that's the question and get it, maybe lock in that 7 spot.
I hope so. I mean, you know, we've won 2 this week, 2-1 this week. The kind of baseball type series that we're playing with Indiana, you know, it's still kind of weird, even though we've been
right.
started in COVID, where to reduce travel and wear and tear on players, sometimes you have a team that parks themselves in town for 3 days. So I want to wish all the Indiana Pacers tonight to go enjoy all that Atlanta has to offer and, you know, just continue to enjoy it right up to game time.
Right on.
We're talking with Steve Kuenen, Hawks CEO, as he joins us each and every week. Look, we have not had to make, I don't believe, I'm not going to say that the DeAndre Hunter trade wasn't difficult, but we played a soundbite earlier from Mark Cuban, who used to own the Mavericks. I think he's still got a small percentage in him, but he was asked about the whole Luka trade. I'm just curious, like, from where we are in our organization, you know, those decisions, obviously, everybody's in on when you start talking about a major star. But the shoulders of this falls on, you know, Nico Harrison. Mike and I were talking about this, and there's been sort of, I don't want to, you know, overstate it, but the revolt in Dallas about Luka being traded. But we haven't had to deal with anything like that. But, Steve, these kinds of deals, not only do they change franchises, but, you know, people lose jobs in the NBA and certainly in executive positions. I'm just curious where you're at on this whole thing.
You know, Carl, I think you and I have talked about this before. The team's always going to take the L in this situation. You know, if a player had problems behind the scene or if a player wasn't living up to their end of the bargain, you're not going to really come out and say it. I think one of the things the Mavs have done is that they use the term culture, which is overused in sports and thrown around far too much. And I don't think people understand what that means. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't understand exactly what they meant when they talked about culture with Luka. Was it that he was disruptive? Was it that you didn't feel like he was a winning player, which would be hard to say considering, you know, he was in the finals last year. So I think it's, you know, I think sometimes trading players put us in a rock and hard place. I'm really happy with our Hunter trade. George last night, Yang, had 25 points and really kept us in the game and then helped us win the game.
Right.
Terrence Mann has been playing really, really well. But when you trade a player, you're trading for something and you're trading for reasons. And when you do something that's as explosive as trading a player like Luka, which we might have a little experience with, you know, you put yourself in a very vulnerable position, but that's just part of that's part of running a team and being part of sports.
Were you working at Coca-Cola when Stan Kasten traded traded Dominique?
Yeah. Oh, no. I still hear it from him.
Because I was not here in Atlanta, Steve, but of course, Steve went to UGA and a lifelong resident here, and obviously, but it just, that's one that, you know, it just still, it boggles the mind if you take it back to 95 where the Hawks were in the standings, and it just, that's one that still will get people's blood to boil.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think that Dominique didn't have a ton of great years after that.
No.
Sometimes teams want to sell high and, you know, when a player is cresting, you know, to the top rather than selling on the lower end. Danny Manning for Dominique Wilkins will never make sense in any world or alternative universe that I live in. Because Dominique was amazing, but I think they thought they were selling high, you know.
For those who don't remember, Danny didn't stay. That was the thing. It was basically the inference was he was going to sign a long-term deal with the Hawks, and that didn't happen. Again, it was before your watch, so you can't get in trouble for it.
No, I can't get in trouble for that. And Danny Manning, you know, wasn't a tenth of the lovely man, I'm sure. To the Manning family, I apologize for what I'm getting ready to say. You know, but he couldn't carry any part of Dominique, you know. Dominique was incredible and still didn't get enough due for his time. But the team traded him. And, you know, this is hard. I mean, you guys, I've been a fan a lot longer than I was an executive. You know, you guys have a lot of fun talking trades and proposed trades. But when you're really dealing with human lives and the reason, it's not so much fun.
Yeah, it's a great point. Let's talk about the health of the NBA real quick. There is a perception, I think, that we've talked a little bit about this, you know, all the threes and all the stuff, the flow of the game. But the health of the league is good, right? Can you talk to us about that and around the league, what's being said? I mean, I know the streaming numbers are great. You guys got a new TV deal that kicks in next year. The health of the league is in a good spot.
The health of the league's incredible, but the backlash you heard, and it's dying down a little bit, was time to this extraordinary $76 billion 11-year TV deal.
Right.
And when you're going to play at that level, people are going to start to tear you down, you know. They build you up and then they tear you down. All of a sudden, the product's not any good. Well, I looked at all the numbers of every team today, and virtually every game in the NBA sold out. TV ratings are virtually flat. And virtually flat is good in the new reality because less people are watching, you know, conventional linear television. There are more stars. We can continue to name the number of stars in the game. There are some weaknesses and vulnerabilities. The All-Star game certainly didn't look good in light of what hockey pulled off with the four-country program. So we have work to do, but I do think we're a victim of a bit of our own success.
The one thing, Steve, and we talked a lot about that when it went down, because it was something certainly the NHL kind of lucked into with the drama with Canada. But now, in hindsight, if you talk to the general manager of the Bruins or the Panthers, you've lost your two best players. You know, Tkachuk is now out for the Panthers. So now, I mean, it was great. These guys did get physical and it did matter. But all of a sudden now, star players are not there. You know, and just like any other league, you got to have your stars.
Right. And then I'm sure the narrative is going to turn based on that. But You want to talk great marketing? Let's have three fights in 9 seconds.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
It was unique. It was definitely unique to the NHL. The one thing is,
that's going to actually be my all-star proposal. Guys, this is what we're going to do. Take the 24 best players and have them beat the crap out of each other at the opening tip. What do you think?
Hey, Bob Rapp,
out of the league.
Carl, Bob Rapp, here. Time now for these two to step into the octagon here at center court.
Exactly.
Well, you're gonna get a reaction. There's no doubt about it if that was to go down. But we know the league isn't supporting that.
That was a joke.
It's right. Not gonna support.
What about the three-point shooting thing that Barkley brought up and the TNT guys had talked about? We talked about it two weeks back. I mean, it's just that's not gonna change. You can't tell the team not to shoot 3-pointers. I think that's the one thing in the regular season that does hurt some of the aesthetic with the NBA.
Well, let's talk about the gang on TNT. Don't they remind you of the Muppet sitting in the balcony of the theater bitching about everything?
Wow.
I can say it because I hired them.
Man. Yes, that's true. Wow. You did.
I hired half of them.
Man. That's true. Dropping the hammer.
So that's
not his own creation. Carl, on his own creation.
The analytics, a 3-point has 50% more value than a 2.
Okay.
And if you can hit them at 37, 38%, that's a winning formula. So you can criticize it all you want, but it is analytics. Just like, I think baseball got a little over-analytical with the shift, and that would make me crazy. A guy would get a beautiful, ground ball into the hole, but there'd be 18 people over there. And, that's kind of been settled with rules, and I think ours will die down also, but, hitting threes is very exciting, and we came back last night by hitting a bunch of threes. I would hate to be hamstrung to rally back on a team.
All right, let's talk about what everybody really wants to know. What were you and Kirby talking about last night? Come on, give us something. Give us something, Steve. Like, did he say we're going to be really good in the spring? Did he say anything?
I don't ask questions like that when I have a guest like Kirby. One of the things that we did talk about is, and he is an incredible football coach. He's an amazing football coach.
He is.
But he's like, how much is this team worth? Like $300-400 million?
That's funny.
No, sir. That's probably close to $5 billion on the open market for control.
That's funny.
Are you kidding me? Because one of the things we were talking about is, while I'm fortunate to run a professional team, he really is also.
Right.
Except my free agency is, not as lenient as his.
Right.
He can have to redo his team every year. We were talking about some of the contracts that exist in the league, like a Bradley Beal, who can't be traded, who's owed $50, $53, and $57 million over the next 3 years. And he's saying, with NIL, you make one bad signing.
It hurts you.
It hurt your program for a long time.
Yeah.
So just talking the parallels. But it was about his boys and him having a great night. And
sure.
I was fortunate enough to have the seat next to his.
Awesome. Carl, I can tell you what was said. We need some more from you, Steve, in the envelope for the Bulldog Club. Because, again, Steve,
never.
Only you, Steve, can help the NIL.
He said never.
There you go.
But you know what? That's funny because you're right. There is a parallel between how college football is now and, unfortunately, professional sports with these contracts and whatnot. You're right. Hey, Steve, we appreciate you stopping by, man. Have a great weekend. By the way, Hawks in action tomorrow. Homestand continues, by the way.
Yes, it does. come on out tomorrow night. We are sold out, but there's always tickets available in the NBA. Monday night, we play Philadelphia. Wednesday night, so we're playing every other night, and I love having games in March that mean something. So come out and help us.
All right, man. As Steve said, hopefully the Pacers are diving into Cheetah and Magic City, and then Rick Carlisle can't come up with a new game plan, because it is kind of tough, Carl, when you have a game like that, and then you get a chance to X and O, and then come right back against the same squad that has really had success against us.
No doubt. It is. It's a tough task. I mean, I think Quinn Snyder said it last night. He's like, we're going to have our hands full on Saturday, because it's tough, you know?
Here's a moral question for you. Do you think it was wrong to put coupons to those fine establishment in their locker last night?
No, not at all.
Just a question. Didn't say anybody did. Just a question.
Outstanding.
Steve, thanks so much.
We're done.
We'll talk to you next week.
I think I'm done. Bye.
All right, brother.
And we're joined by 92.9 The Game Braves insider Grant McCauley. And Grant, look, I know you got to spend some time down in spring training. I was watching the Braves YouTube series on their channel yesterday, and Brian Snicker, I thought, said it best. Grant is like, dude, after their final game out in San Diego, he said, I wish spring training started tomorrow, simply from a health standpoint. Like, he's ready to get everybody back healthy. Give us a quick update. Before we get to the Sean Murphy stuff, give us a quick update on Spencer Strider, Ronald Acuna, and some of those other pieces.
Yeah, I think those are the two biggest ones. I mean, everybody, every call, every conversation I have, no matter if it's, you know, professional or not, people want to know, when is Ronald Acuna Jr. going to be back? When can we expect Spencer Strider back in the rotation? And I think, you know, Alex Anthopoulos and the Braves have gone all the way back to after the season ended, that same time frame, where I think even when the wild card series was over, Brian Snitker did his post-game availability and was like, yeah, I am ready for spring training. Now, Ronald Acuna Jr. and Spencer Strider, both, I think, in very, very good shape and in a very, very good place. But the Braves have not wanted to put a timeline on either guy, and certainly not one that's combined. It's going to be an individualized thing. But putting my best guess out there, which is what it is at this point, Ronald Acuna Jr. is doing all of his work on the backfields and the minor league sides. That means he can get an unlimited number of at-bats, continue to push himself to the readiness that he needs to be for a rehab assignment. And I think that he's aiming to rejoin the Braves by early May. Now, Spencer Strider, over the next 10 or so days, could get into a Grapefruit League start, and that would be wonderful to see. But he's also going to need to ramp up with another half a dozen starts, would be my guess. If you want to include the spring training one, that's fine. But he's got to build his pitch count and his innings up to that 5 or 6 ratio at least before they're going to be comfortable putting him back in there. So I'm going to say that both of them are probably looking like early May, and I don't think the Braves are going to get, after all the care that they've taken in bringing him along, you know, jump the gun and bring anybody back too soon. When they show that they're able to check all the boxes and medically get signed off on, they'll do the rehab assignments, and then when they prove that they're just ready to be who they are, then I think you'll see them in a Braves uniform. And I will say this, it can't come too soon. We've been without them for a very long time. I think fans are anxious to see them, and I think the Braves in general, to do the things they want to do this year, I don't need to tell you, having a Cy Young caliber pitcher and an MVP back, that'll boost your chances, your expectations, your confidence, all that stuff.
All right, Grant, this is where I need you, because I see Rob Friedman, the pitching ninja, does a phenomenal job with breaking down some pitching clips. Shows the three strikeouts in the first inning of Ian Anderson that he had last night on the mound. But then I read reports where, you know, he walked some guys. It was just kind of a middle of the road kind of start. Like, what have you made of Ian Anderson? This, not only this spring training, but after his last start, and kind of what do you project for him? It's a lot all in one question, I know.
Yeah, there is. I mean, the big thing is with Ian, you know, is he healthy? Yes, I do think he is. But is he able to command the fastball in particular? This was a problem, and maybe it was as a result of his arm wasn't feeling quite right, and he was going through a lot of things, and that was just ultimately what we discovered, or what they discovered, the problem was, is that he had some issues and ultimately needed Tommy John surgery. But putting all that aside, he made, 14 starts in the minor leagues last year. I think the velocity around, 92, 93, maybe it pumps up to 94. That's workable when you have a changeup as good as his. But his breaking ball offerings, that's something that I know from talking to him down in spring training, he wants to have in his back pocket to mix in a lot more and not just have a show-me pitch. He doesn't want to be a primarily two-pitch pitcher, but it's all going to come back to, and I feel like I'm in a time machine, it's going to come back to command for him. But he is out of options. So I do think he opens the season with the Braves, and they let him continue to figure it out because he did miss an incredible amount of time, has not faced major league hitters in quite a while. And on the flip side of that, or maybe to go along with that, even though he did pitch in the minors last year, it's just not quite the same thing. It's been a couple of years since we've seen Ian Anderson. He's not long in the tooth if you look at how much longer he could play. I mean, he's in his mid-20s, and I just think that they owe it to themselves to find out what they've got there. But you're also going to have to produce. That's just kind of the nature of the beast, so we'll see what he's able to do.
Hanging out with 92.9 The Game, Braves insider Grant McCauley. Grant, the news of the week, unfortunately, has been Sean Murphy, the rib injury, and the unfortunate early rise to prominence, possibly, of Drake Baldwin as the backstop. Look, Bo and I talked about this earlier in the week. I think anything you get offensively comes in as a bonus. But what has the talk been so far, at least in the last few days, and maybe dating back before that, about Drake Baldwin, the catcher, and his ability to work with his pitching staff?
Well, it's a funny statement that you just made because I feel like you make that conversation piece, you know, around, well, whatever you get offensively is a bonus for a young player. But for Sean Murphy, well, if he doesn't hit, then he needs to go. He's got to be out of here. Like, there's a segment of the fans that want to run him, you know, right out of town. And don't get me wrong, 2024 was a lost season, a bad season, a career worst year for Sean Murphy. And he's aware of that, too. So, you know, hearing from him in spring training, you know, the oblique injury was an issue for him, obviously, for 2 months, but he said he just never got his swing right. He never felt right, and you can look at the numbers, and that would pretty much underscore that. But this is a catcher that prides himself on being in there on a regular basis. There's no everyday catcher, but Sean Murphy's about as close as it gets. He wants to, I think, be in there behind the plate 125, 130 times, and that was the plan a year ago. And obviously, it went right out the window when he got hurt on opening day. That was once again going to be the plan this year. Now, if you look at the timeline, if he's on the lower end of this, the 4 weeks, he'd be back in early April. If he misses the 6 weeks, yeah, well, you push it into, you know, mid to maybe late-ish April. I'm sure he might need a couple of at-bats to get himself ready as well. Drake Baldwin, there's a window there, and he is an exciting player to flip the script on all of that. It's tantalizing to look at the offensive numbers and the things that he did and the rate stats and all of the data that you can collect on a young player and imagine what he can be at the big league level. He is an affable and very eager young man as well to learn. I mean, I was very impressed in my conversations with him about just how much he was taking from the veterans that were in Gwinnett last year, the Sandy Leones, the Yuli Gurriels, Brian Andersons. I mean, guys that had 5, 10 more years in the big leagues. I mean, even journeyman minor league catchers, he was like, yeah, I can learn things from them about, you know, how to approach the game, how to slow the game down, how I should be thinking between innings, how I should react to different things. So it's a high aptitude, you know, very, very talented kid with a great bat that the Braves, I think, yeah, I mean, you like having a catching prospect that can hit, but this bat is legitimate. And that, I think, is something that, you know, you owe it to yourself at some point to figure out what you've got there, I think. But with Sean Murphy pretty firmly entrenched for the, you know, foreseeable future behind the plate, I'm not really sure what the answer is for Drake Baldwin in terms of opportunity there. But this could be one of them, and he'd have a heck of a chance to make a first impression right out of the gate if he does hit the ground running.
Grant, Orlando Arcia, if he can't find that 2023 form, what is the plan there? Are they going to just ride it out with him at shortstop, or are they going to at some point say, we've got to upgrade? Is Nacho ready? I mean, there's just a lot, and that's a position that really the fans have kind of honed in on in their offseason of they wanted an improvement.
Yeah, no, and I get that, and I think that, you know, ultimately, if there was an answer out there that made sense, I think that the Braves could have moved in that direction, but I didn't really hear a lot about anything, obviously, that got anywhere close. And ultimately, there weren't, you know, 5, 6, 7 premier names out there to pursue either. So I think that it's kind of exactly what you said. You can ride it out to a certain extent, but I do think that there reaches a point where if it's what we saw last year, again this year, you know, they're not going to hesitate to try to upgrade that position. But who's available? What can you get? Obviously, we're talking trade at that point. I don't see anybody in the minor league system that I look at and think, well, that's a clear upgrade. You should definitely use him, because Nacho Alvarez, when we looked at him a year ago, you know, he had a lot of trouble at the big league level hitting. If you've already got a major league shortstop that's not hitting a lot, but defensively he's, you know, certainly serviceable at the very least, I think that, you know, Orlando would get the benefit of the doubt in that situation. But it doesn't mean that they won't revisit it if they need to at some point during the season to try to find somebody who's a little bit more of an upgrade there. But yeah, it's a situation that I think, you know, for Orlando, I don't know if it's fair or not, but, you know, life and sports aren't always fair. Last year, with so many other players out, I think he got the microscope a little bit more than anybody ever anticipated him to get it. And he also found himself, you know, in key situations routinely with a bat in his hands and runners on base and wasn't able to come through. So that's going to lead to a certain type of feeling. And coming into this year, it would be great for him to figure out a way to just, again, you don't have to be an all-star, but to be serviceable at the plate, at the very least, would certainly be helpful. And batting ninth, I don't think you're asking too much out of him to make a few contributions down there.
Finishing up the last few minutes with 92.9 The Game, Braves insider Grant McCauley. Grant, we don't know specifically the return date of Ronald Acuna, but when you look at it right now, Yerkes and Profar, you know, a candidate to handle those leadoff duties. I think one of the things that I hold on to from last year after the injury of Ronald Acuna was the speed on the base pass and just absolutely falling off in terms of stolen bases. I think that's something that the 2025 version of the Atlanta Braves needs very badly. What can we expect in the stolen base category out of this team? Do you think they'll be more aggressive? Do you think Profar can help in that aspect?
I don't really, and Profar is not so much a blazer on the base paths either. He's a good base runner, but he's not coming in, you know, off a 50 stolen base campaign to, you know, change the dynamic at the top or to give you the dynamic that you were sorely missing with no Ronald Acuna Jr. You know, I think that they can run, but it, to me, it's more of a situational thing outside of the Acunas, the Michael Harrises. I mean, even Ozzie Albies, who came up as a guy that, you know, I remember talking to him, you know, going into his first full season in the big leagues and saying, I know this is kind of a weird question and players don't always have an answer for it, but, you know, do you have any goals for this year, statistically or otherwise? And he said, yeah, I want to steal 50 bags. Well, that hasn't happened, obviously. He has never stolen 50 bases in the big leagues. Does it not mean that he can, you know, pick and choose 15 to 20? Of course he can. But outside of that, I don't think you're going to be getting a lot from the Matt Olsons and the Austin Rileys, who is surprisingly quick for a big guy. I will say that. And obviously, you know, your catching situation and on down the list. So I think it's more about the situation for them. I mean, Jared Kelnick can run a little bit, but, you know, realistically, how much playing time is he going to get? I don't really think I'm forgetting anybody. Orlando Arcia might be the slowest guy on the team. I mean, no disrespect to Sean Murphy, but, you know, you're just not getting a lot there. So I think it's more about getting this team back to the norms of driving the ball, the power, the run production, and the on-base skills. And that ultimately is what the Braves value, is the ability to get on base, the ability to slug, and that's what they want to get back to being. If you get the stolen bases from Ronald or Michael Harris or whoever, that's great. But I think it's more about normalizing and trying to find the ways to improve over what was a frustrating season, an injury, and a frustrating season from production for several Braves a year ago.
All right, Grant, got about 40 seconds. Grant McCauley, host From the Diamond. What is your projection for the back end of the bullpen, the 7, 8, 9 guys?
I think you got Pierce Johnson playing a big role. Dylan Lee obviously is in there, and we know who's going to be closing. That's going to be Raisel Iglesias. But there will be some competition this spring with some non-roster guys and even some guys that we haven't really seen in a Braves uniform before. Angel Perdomo, probably the biggest one of those for me, but you know, you've got some longtime journeyman lefties like Jake Diekman, Chasen Shreve that could push themselves into the mix. But I would keep an eye on Deisbel Hernandez. I think he has a role to play, and it could be a big one with Joe Jimenez out. It could be, you know, Deisbel Hernandez getting the first crack at some very important innings, because Pierce Johnson's not going to be able to make 100 appearances. He's not Mike Marshall.
He is a human Braves encyclopedia, and he has a nice beard. His name is Grant McCauley, and he's a 92.9 The Game Braves insider. Grant, appreciate it, man. Always appreciate you stopping by.
Yeah, I don't want to push you overtime, but I am going to say, if Barry Bonds says that he can hit 100-mile-an-hour fastball at 60, I ain't putting it past him. So I wanted to make sure we got that in there. I was sitting here waiting on that one this entire conversation.
I ain't buying
Grant,
it, Grant.
Thank you for backing me up on that. I knew you would.
I ain't buying it. Thanks,
no problem,
Grant.
Guys. Have a good one.
92.9 The Game, Atlanta Falcons insider Smoke and Joe Patrick joins the show on Fridays at 12:20. Joe, how are you?
I'm good, guys. Hey, have you seen the one with like this viral thing where like parents crack eggs on their kids' heads?
Nope.
Hell, they're supposed to be eggs.
That's a weird one too. That's a weird one too. It's just like random, yeah. And then like laughing about it and filming the whole thing, and then be like, ah, I'm just kidding, while the kids got like egg in their hair and stuff. Like, yeah, I'm sure they're really laughing about that one.
Some people have kids just for content.
Some blank just for content. Ain't funny.
Yeah, man. And that's one of them.
Eggs are expensive.
They are, and gross.
Right, yeah.
Like, to get an egg cracked on your head is very gross.
Yeah.
You guys are telling me about a boxer who did that to a guy.
The boxer slapped the guy, man. But, yeah, that's just foul.
Slapping people
with
eggs.
That's just foul, JP, man. It really, really is. JP, we're trying to make some sense of this salary cap stuff here, all right? And we're trying because, to me, and you've been covering this team for us and do a great job, JP, but I didn't know, why does it always seem like the Falcons are one of the last teams to make a move? When you see other teams restructuring and cutting and everything, why does it always seem like the Falcons wait until the day of to get things done?
I mean, it's a great question. I don't really have a good answer for it, other than I would just say that there's not really a reason not to, I guess. But it's weird that we always, you know, we just tend to see this kind of happened around the league, but it does feel like the Falcons' announcements in this regard are the last ones to come through. Now, and also, they haven't really had to do a lot of this, frankly, the last couple of years. Right. They've been in a pretty good salary cap spot, especially, so we haven't really seen, you know, the cuts or, you know, significant restructures that are happening right before free agency. But, yeah, I don't really have a good answer on that front, but the only answer I can give is that they're definitely coming soon at some point because they got to clear up about $4 million. At the very least.
They definitely
more.
Know that, right? Like, they know that the league years.
I have it on good authority that they do.
Okay.
That they do. My sources inside the building are confirming to me that they are aware.
They do know the league year starts next week. That's good. Okay, so we have that. That's a good starting point. We've talked about them leading up to this. Still kind of wondering what levers they might pull. But, like, what do you think that they actually do to get underneath that number by next week?
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of different kind of restructures they can do and cuts they can make. I think, like David Onyemata, I think just making that one cut alone is going to now get them above the salary cap threshold or below, I guess I should say, because of the fact that the NFL salary cap went up. That really kind of helps in that regard. But ultimately, the Falcons are going to need to clear a lot more cap than just the $4 million and change that they're going to need to clear that threshold. They have to do that to be compliant, of course, but obviously I think that they and we all want to see them be as active as they feel like they possibly can be in free agency. And the free agency period, it's so hard to determine exactly what's going to happen, but I think it will tell us a lot about what we can then project for the draft, because it feels like, you know, there are certain needs this team has, clear needs in terms of a safety, pass rush help, obviously, linebacker, and if you get that let's say they go out and make a move for Trey Hendrickson, for example, or any one of these, you know, impressive edges or defensive linemen that are coming on the board, then that's probably not going to be something that they target with their first. Like, having said that, I probably shouldn't say that, because that's exactly what they did last year at the quarterback
exactly.
position. But that's a little bit different. That's a little bit different at the quarterback position. But ultimately, I think whatever they do end up doing in free agency after they're able to do some of these restructures. I think Jesse Bates is a guy who could potentially get restructured. I can't remember Chris Lindstrom. I think he would be available for a restructure. Jake Matthews. There are several guys with big contracts. They can actually clear potentially a lot. It's just a question of how much risk you want to take on, because all that restructuring that you do has, you know, negative ramifications on the back end.
How hard of a decision do you think, or not even a decision, the thought process right now going into a great situation, Joe, and meaning like because that's $16 million. And me and Andy, we just talked when we got you on, but that's a big hole. I mean, you gain money, but it's a big hole because you are removing the best defensive lineman that you have.
Right. That's the conundrum with him. And, you know, it's kind of similar. I mean, you could make a similar case. It's not the same situation with what's happening at quarterback, honestly, and with Kirk Cousins specifically, and the fact that, you know, a lot of people just want him released and everything, and that would open up like $1 million or whatever cap room. You're basically saving nothing by cutting him.
But you still have he's still a valuable piece for you in terms of at least just being a backup and not being a position that you would or would not need to fill, depending on what you do with him. It's similar with Grady Jarrett. If you get rid of Grady Jarrett, do you then need to go out and sign another defensive lineman, or maybe you draft one? We all kind of understand that could potentially be a move that they make in the draft. But any of these players that you cut, they already have a certain amount of value. It's a matter of trying to figure out which players are the most valuable relative to the pay. And I think it's fair to say, that Grady Jarrett at this point in his career, there is that discrepancy between the value he's providing on the field versus what he's being paid. Yeah. That's the whole reason why an extension or a restructure of some sort will make a lot of sense in his case. And I honestly think, guys, we talked to him at exit interview days. He was one of the few players who spoke, and I was going to ask him the question straight up, but he seemed to answer it in what he was saying before, in that he just seemed really, really invested and wanting to come back and be an Atlanta Falcon. Now, part of the reason is because what the salary is, knowing that he's going to get a good payday. But I really think that he is extremely optimistic with what he saw specifically from Michael Penix in those last 3 weeks. That gives him a lot of hope. And he's also a player, obviously, that has this intrinsic value in the locker room and just being kind of a model for young players to come in and be a mentor for them, like he's been for guys like Taquan Graham, Ruka Roro, some of these other guys. So that's all stuff that the Falcons are going to have to, figure out over a boardroom table before they let the rest of the world know.
Yeah, no, that's a point Randy made a couple weeks ago of the most important thing for this team is developing the defensive linemen that they have, but you also want to have a veteran presence there, which Grady is. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, everybody on your defensive line is going to be first, second, third-year guys. Right. I don't know. I got the sense in talking to Raheem last week that's how they view him, too. They talked about his presence in the locker room and leadership, and obviously the player. So, I don't know. They feel that way. He feels that way. A restructure, you still get it. Right. You're just moving around different. To me, it feels like a restructure is more likely than a
or
release.
Or pay cut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. That's the reason why I've never felt like a cut is really likely at this point, even though it is it makes a lot of sense in terms of just the number and how much money you'd be able to clear up and to go redeploy. There is still, I think, a lot of value in him, even aside from the fact that he is your most productive interior pass rusher and just your best interior player at this point still.
Joe, 1 minute. United back in action after a disappointing loss last week in Charlotte. How are they as far as health-wise, fullbacks and all of that stuff?
Yeah, they're getting healthier. I was over there at the training ground yesterday. Obviously, a big focus on the second half issue that they've been having that's reoccurred in both games so far. So I would not expect that to happen again, just based on the demeanor that Ronnie Dyla was speaking about it. But will it be interesting to see if they can actually follow up on that. They are getting a fullback back and Pedro Amador, a left back. Not sure if he's actually going to be able to start. If he possibly can at all, he will, because they are that desperate for a player out there. But Ronnie Dyla did confirm to me when I asked that Dominic Chonqui, the academy player who's actually now with Atlanta United too, will once again be called up. He made his MLS debut against Charlotte last week and actually played pretty well. So I wonder if Amador is not able to play, whether they would go with Chonqui or go to Luis Abram again, who started there last week against Charlotte. But either way, they're in a better position. They're in better shape at that position going into this one, which will be helpful against a dangerous New York Red Bulls team.
Joe, exemplary work.
Appreciate you, my boy.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Smoking Joe Patrick there, 92.9 The Game Falcons insider, as well as Atlanta United reporter. With a lot of kind of reinforcing some of the stuff we were getting into early, which is...
And we're now joined by the great presence of one Rusty Manziel. I'll save all your titles for another time.
Yeah, let's do that when she gets back.
What's up, man? So, again, 92.9 The Game night last night at State Farm Arena. You were present.
Yeah, man.
Having a good time.
It was awesome.
It was a great night, man. It's a cool venue, obviously. A great game to watch. Always cool. We don't ever get to see a lot of 92.9 The Game.
That's the reason I went, to be honest.
Yeah. We kind of just clock out at 9 o'clock and run into Steak, which we haven't seen Steak in a while. He's
coming
been on the
in
road.
Today, man.
Was Steak there?
No, he's coming in today. Trust me, you would have known if he was there.
Right. Yeah. He makes his presence. Although he might have been in the owner's suite or something else with Saltzman or somebody else. You said something last night
that
knocked me so far off kilter that I couldn't think about anything else between last night and right now. You brought up ranch dressing, and I'll let Bo get to why that conversation came up, but you answered a question from Bo, and you just simply said, it's the only place that I'll eat ranch dressing.
ever.
I genuinely have never met another soul.
You have.
That would, like, that is insane.
So everybody knows that Rusty's from Rome and I'm from Dallas, Georgia. Yep. Now, Dallas and Rome are not particularly close, but they're also not particularly far away. They're about 45 minutes to an hour, depending on how fast you drive. They're
both similar settings.
We used to drive from Dallas, and we would go to Rockmart and take that highway and Rockmart
278
that goes all the way up to Rome.
Yep.
And we would go downtown, and we would go to this sandwich place called Schroeder's.
Schroeder's Deli.
It had the best waffle fries you'll ever taste that don't come from Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
And I'm a big fan of a cold sandwich with a hot side, like the fries.
Yeah.
And when I asked you straight up, I said, is Schroeder still there?
Oh, yeah.
Because we used to go there and watch a band play. They have the back door, the back patio.
Courtyard.
Yeah, and it's like in between buildings. It's really cool.
Yeah.
But then
I'm already
Rusty's,
vibing with this place.
Then Rusty,
cool, man. It's cool.
Rusty goes in about the ranch. What is so special about the ranch?
Homemade, it's homemade ranch, and I don't know why. I'm not a big ranch guy. I know I look like a ranch guy.
You kind of do.
It's homemade, and I'm telling you, they do these potato skins, what they're famous for. And you can order those potato skins, and that ranch comes out, and I'm telling you, it's like peak male moments. Like, I can taste it right now.
Big pause.
I'm just telling you. It is like, if I don't
the
smoke a cigarette, I don't smoke cigarettes, but after you have a good batch of potato skins and homemade ranch, you might need one.
Never heard anything described
like that. So the Rusty Manziel kit to go to Schroeder's is a wallet that's ready to go with money, because you got to buy that.
Yep.
And maybe a pack of Marlboro Reds.
Yes, sir.
You know, for after.
Yes, sir.
And it's I have to know. So are you a blue cheese guy?
Dude, I'm not a...
What do you... No, wait.
If I eat wings, nothing.
You don't eat anything
with
your chicken.
You raw dog your wings?
Raw dog. It better be good. I get them hot.
Like, is this one of those things where you refuse to, like, try it? You just set your ways?
I'm setting my ways on that, man.
Jesus, Rusty. Yes. I think you know a guy, man.
No.
I can see
the... I'm so taken aback by
this. Into me, man, probably.
I can see the one side with the dressing for your wing, and then the other side you raw dog it, but you raw dog the whole wing.
So,
Oh, yeah.
What's the sandwich of choice when you go to...
I get a ham roll. It's like in a pita bread.
Okay.
And it's warmed up.
Right.
And it's off a chain, I'm telling you.
All right.
You get waffle fries.
Oh, I'm hungry.
But you always get the order of potato skins first.
Yeah.
It's just, I get the bacon only. I'm telling you, man. The place has been there since 1981.
Yeah, I didn't know it's been that long. They opened the second one in
Kennesaw
for a while.
They franchised them for a while, and they've just never really been able to get that magic of that one.
Yeah.
Same guy owns it, same family owns it.
Phenomenal.
I used to bring people home from college, from Athens, and we would go out in Rome as youngsters.
Yeah.
On Saturdays when we woke up, I would take them there, and they'd be like, holy smokes, man.
Once Pork Chop comes, I'm going to need a guy's on out. I'm going to call Rusty. I'm going to drive to Rome.
We can do that.
And we'll go to Schroeder's, maybe watch a live band, have a few cold beers.
We'll do that.
The Mike Bobo news, which is it really news that Bobo got an extension? And how did that come about?
It was news yesterday. It wasn't new news.
Yeah.
I think it came out because Mark Weiser, doing his job from a longtime beat writer there for Athens Banner Herald for Georgia, he asked for the I know what he was doing because I know what time of year it is. He was probably asking to see who got raises on the contracts.
Yeah.
Georgia releases those about this time. So I'm sure he asked for Mike Bobo's contract, and then he realized he put two and two together that he had an extension, one extra year, which I think was actually signed in early 2024 that gave him the extra year of 2026. So coming off coming off the record setting 2023 year, he had a team in the SEC come after him.
Interesting.
With a big raise.
I know you know who it is, but
I'm not going to go that way. A big raise. Listen, if I could say it, I would, but you know, they like basketball. Anyway, they had a guy that happened to leave to go to Tampa Bay to be the offensive coordinator. But anyway, without saying what team it was, they came after him with what I was told was a significant pay raise opportunity. Obviously, at that point, Kirby made a decision to give him a raise and a new deal.
Yeah.
And he stayed. And But that news came out yesterday was a little different than I think everybody thought that Kirby would yesterday. Just him and Bobo were sitting around and go, you know what, let's sign that and get that extension out.
Well,
not the case.
And I know that Mike Bobo is such a polarizing name when it comes to Georgia fans. I made this point when we were bringing this up earlier. And look, you're close to that program. Yeah. I just made the point that no matter what he is, that it's almost – I think there are some jaded Georgia fans simply from the fact that he's not Todd Monken.
Yeah.
Like Todd, and the point I was making earlier – there are no other Todd Monkens.
Yeah.
Like the Todd Monken is extremely unique in football landscapes. You're not just going to land another Todd Monken. But I do think that Mike Bobo, from an outsider standpoint, not a Georgia standpoint, I think he catches strays that are probably unnecessary. He dealt with less than a full deck this year in terms of his offense.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a lot of different sides of the fence. You know, the thing this year was he's never won an SEC championship. Georgia can't win an SEC championship with him. Well, when they win one, now it's like, well, they've never won a national championship with this guy.
Right.
So that's the next thing that he's going to have to cross off his list. But, you know, it is a topic that pushes a lot of buttons, a lot of people on both sides of the fence with that. But, you know, I think Kirby Smart going out, I keep saying this, if you will sit down and just look at things, Georgia just signed 7 wide receivers. That will never happen ever again under Kirby Smart. They will never sign 7 wide receivers in one class ever. So what does that tell you? That Kirby Smart, who ultimately makes the decision on those roster spots, goes, you know what? We got to have help there.
Well, and I want to dive in because, you know, obviously next week, Georgia football kicking off spring practice. Yep. Now, on my side of the fence over in Tuscaloosa, everybody's paying attention to the quarterback battle.
You got a quarterback battle over there.
In Athens, talk to us about position battles to look forward to starting next week and on throughout spring.
Well, the boring one is safety because they lose Malachi Starks and Van Jackson, and nobody wants to talk about it. They brought in 3 transfers. Now, K.J. Bolden, obviously the guy that started as a true freshman, is going to have one of them
Buford,
now. Buford, the five-star. And he played great this year. But they brought in 3 transfers for those spots. Who's going to get those minutes? Now, obviously, there's going to be some quarterback battle there. It's not as wide open to me as it is in Alabama with Ty Simpson and Keelan Russell and those guys.
Right.
But I think the offensive line, you lose those guys. You lose Tate Ratledge. You lose Jared Wilson. You lose Xavier Truss. I mean, there were a lot of guys that played a lot of minutes. Now, the guys that are in there are highly recruited, but they're young guys.
Right.
So,
and that's a position that you still have to develop in college football.
And I don't know that I don't know that Kirby's ever going to be able to do what he's done the last couple of years where you replace a junior with another junior.
Right.
Now he's replacing juniors and seniors with a redshirt freshman because of the portal.
Yeah, and the NIL, too. Yes. I mean, the portal is half of it, but the other half is you can be paid and go start.
Yeah.
Well, what was the problem with that offensive line last year? Was it just health? Because
I think continuity, I think health. You know, I don't really know why they couldn't consistently run the football, but it was one of the kind of – because I get paid to give my opinion about Georgia football and try to give people answers. I'll be honest with you, it's the one time that I'm looking and I go, I don't know what the hell happened. I really don't. Do you see Tate Ratledge last week? And I know Tate. You see Tate at Combine saying we take the blame as players like he should.
Right. That's what leaders do.
That's the ownership. But listen, it was something didn't work. The one thing I will tell you, when you do the self-scouting, the teams do that in February where you get 2 weeks where you sit as a staff, you watch every single game. Basically, like you're playing yourself, you want to build a scouting report against you. And I was told that Georgia has dug deep into the run game, what happened, and how to fix it. So we'll see. But the run game was the biggest question. The drops and all that other stuff and Carson Beck up and down.
Well, it was all a perfect storm.
Yeah, perfect storm.
It all went together.
Perfect storm.
Hey, I know this is a little bit off base for you, but and it doesn't really have anything to do with the Falcons either, but Will Campbell, he played great at LSU for, a couple years?
Mm-hmm.
He's 6'6", 320, but apparently he's got T-Rex arms.
He's got some short ones, man.
Let me ask you a question as a guy that talks to – you've talked to NFL teams about drafting players, and you talk to all the college guys with recruiting. Should I ignore years of film for a measurement? Or is the measurement in the NFL something that maybe that's going to knock him? Because I'm seeing people talk about him moving position.
The problem he's going to have to overcome, and I think Mike will back me on this, is when I talk to these coaches, it's data points. They've got so many data points of guys with short arms and it not working out long term.
It's the same as the data point about quarterbacks with small hands.
Yes.
It's almost exactly the same.
It's the same thing with Ladd McConkey. Eventually, there's going to be a Ladd McConkey.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to have a different data point. But Will Campbell is going to deal with that. There's a kid, and I know you're going to know him. Both of you will know him. Peter Woods, the five-star from Alabama.
Yeah.
Super freak defensive lineman.
Yeah.
Our guy that does the recruiting rankings, Charles Power for Own Three, he is a data guy. And Peter Woods has short arms.
Mm.
Like some of the shortest we measured.
Wow.
And when Peter Woods goes through the NFL Combine, and he's going to get questioned on that. He's been very productive at Clemson. He was a number one player in the state of Alabama. He's really good. He's disruptive. They're going to get on him about those arms.
Start hanging from the pull-up bar right now.
Dude, no doubt. I guarantee you somebody's the same thing they did with your quarterback over there between the Senior Bowl and my man just happened to.
He's going to be in one of those torture machines.
How does your hands grow? Now, I need to know because I got Whopper hands.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, I can't hold a Whopper in my hand. I need two hands. How do you grow your hands that much?
Burger stretch.
Burger King hands.
Stretch them, yeah.
I need Jalen Milroe's hand stretchers.
Jalen Milroe, yeah, man. Jake Fromm dealt with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jake Fromm. He was 8 1/4 at somewhere. His dad called me and said, he'll be 9.
Yeah.
Guess what? It's Senior Bowl. I mean, his pro day in Georgia. Yeah, he was 9.
Unfortunately, we got to go to break. We're way over time, but always enjoy it, man. Appreciate you stopping by. Never enough time for the conversation.
Yep.
So good to see you, buddy.
Bye, man.